Every story told has a story of its own.
She said the words, "I won't forget it. What more do you want from me?"
It was on the fly decision making. It was drinking water from a fire hose at that point.
Every now and then, someone at a place like the grocery store might say something like, "I'm glad you're holding MPS accountable. That keeps my fire burning."
Bringing you the story behind the story. This is Reporter's Notebook. Now, here's your host, Adam Roberts.
Welcome to Reporter's Notebook, where we examine the biggest stories from the past week, told from the perspective of reporters out in the field, while also taking a deeper dive on stories that deserve a closer examination. I'm Adam Roberts. Thanks, as always, for joining us here on the show. Another big one in store coming up on the program today. We examine some environmental news in the past few weeks that you may have missed throughout the state of Wisconsin. WTMJ's Jessica Gatzow joins us to talk about some of this. Also on the show today, WTMJ's Nazir Spencer, out and about at Bucks Media Day, as we are in the midst of course, playoff baseball. Don't overlook the fact that it will soon be Milwaukee Bucks basketball season. Great time to be a Wisconsin sports fan if you've got all four of the sports happening at once. And in that vein, we're also going to explore an article that was published on Friday by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Todd Rosiak, longtime sports reporter for the paper who's on the Brewers beat, and did a great story on an emotional piece that people had been wondering a little bit about, the story behind it anyway, earlier this year, but just now is coming to light. We'll dive into what that story explored in just a moment. But first, I want to explore a little more closely a story I reported on Thursday, that being the public town hall event held by Milwaukee's new director of the Office of Community Wellness and Safety, Adam Procell. By now, you may have heard a lot about Procell's background before taking this job, specifically his criminal background. The man served 23 years behind bars after he was convicted of homicide in the 1995 death of 18-year-old Robert Bruce. The then 14-year-old Procell pulled the trigger that killed Bruce that day, leading then to his time behind bars, where notably he assaulted a guard at Green Bay Correctional Institution, leading to years spent in solitary confinement. On top of that already eyebrow-raising note about Procell comes the fact that his appointment by Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson came with its own controversy in August, when the mayor chose Procell for the position despite the fact that he was not among the three finalists for the job, and therefore did not have to go through the public hearing process that the three finalists had to for several months leading up to the mayor's announcement. So in many ways, Thursday's event at the Washington Park Senior Center could be viewed by some as a make-good from Procell, putting himself before the crowd and offering an open forum to ask any and all questions that the public had for him. Which brings me to the lesson that I learned through my coverage of the event that evening. If you recall last week on the show, we talked a little bit about reporting on deadline and the strain that comes with that ever-present reality in what we do as reporters every single day. One of those strains is trying to find a nugget or soundbite, as it's called, that hooks the listener or reader or viewer into a story. An example you might see on WTMJ.com, for instance, would be when there's a quote, something the person said, followed by a colon, and then the article headline. There's that bite that gets you to raise your eyebrows and go, okay, well, what's this story about? I want to read or listen or watch more now. Well, on Thursday evening, I took a different approach to how I wanted to tell the story, because while it would have been easy to sit there and write about how Procell laid out his plans for the department and how he would be different from his predecessor, I didn't want to focus my time on any sort of sexy bite that Procell was going to say from the stage. He largely spoke in general ideas of what he wanted out of the department under his leadership. He's got a six-prong approach, so he detailed some of those particular points, yada, yada, yada. My goal instead was to just listen and learn from members of the public who wanted answers to the tough questions that they were going to ask Procell that night. And a question that stood out to me in particular came from a man named Lewis. He wasn't affiliated with any sort of community organization. He wasn't a community activist at all. He just was an everyday guy who had a face-to-face moment with the man who was going to take over a department who's tasked with preventing violence in the community, and he wanted to hold his feet to the fire a little bit.
As a person who's been to 27 funerals, not just people I knew, people intimately, I mean, it seems like you're romanticizing the fact that you did that. You said you spent 25 years in Wisconsin State Prison, your formative years as a juvenile, as an adult, correct? So me being a person who's dealt with thousands, maybe 10,000 people coming out of prison, I know it takes a long time for that prison mentality to escape. How have you done it so fast in 7 years?
To his credit, Purcell responded candidly to Lewis's question, noting that having lived through his experience through the incarceration process and having gone through the actual act of taking another human being's life, he uses it now as a baseline example for what he never wants another young person to go through, which seems critical because Purcell, one of his main emphasis points, is getting youth in the community, specifically teens, employed and earning income even at a young age and establishing that idea of working for the money that you have in your life, rather than resorting to criminal acts to earn that money instead. Time will ultimately tell if hiring an individual with a criminal background to lead an office whose primary mission is to curb crime and violence in the community was the right move. The mayor has repeatedly asked for the community to trust his judgment in naming Purcell to the position, and Purcell himself has said that it will be an uncomfortable process, but that that's okay and necessary to fix the problems that exist in the city of Milwaukee right now. Noting to Lewis, the man who had questioned whether or not Purcell was romanticizing his criminal past, quote, "I'm giving you every single thing I have as a human being to try to repay what I was once a part of." We have turned the calendar over into October, and at least lately, if you're a fan of the Milwaukee Brewers, that means playoff baseball. And that's the case once again this year for the seventh time in the last eight seasons. Can you imagine saying that 20 years ago, seven times in 8 years, the Brewers would be playoff bound? I don't think I could have, watching some of those teams from around 2001, 2002 for sure. But it is playoff season once again, and the Brewers and Cubs currently embroiled in the National League Divisional Series. Now, full disclosure, I am taping this segment of the show before Game 1 has happened on Saturday. So, for anyone in the future, don't spoil it for me here in the past. I'm already nervous enough for the game as it is. Game 2 of the series coming up Monday at American Family Field. But on the topic of baseball and how it relates to what we discuss on Reporter's Notebook here, which is telling the stories of the day through the perspective of reporters, one of the most valuable assets we have in our community here in Wisconsin are a great group of beat reporters who've been covering the Brewers since spring training all the way through the playoffs now. Think names like our own Dominic Catronio here on WTMJ, Adam McKelvey for MLB.com. You've got guys like Kurt Hoge over at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And also at the paper is longtime veteran of the sports beat, and the Brewers in particular, Todd Rosiak. And on Friday, Todd put out a piece that really captured what it means to be a trustworthy beat reporter, not just for objective news telling, but also for being a trustworthy person to speak to in general. In a season full of so many storylines for the Brewers, people may have forgotten the story of Blake Perkins, The Crew's backup center fielder had a late start to his 2025 season, you may recall, when in spring training he hit a pitch from Freddy Peralta right off the inside of his right shin. Eventually, Perkins was able to heal from his injuries and came back to play for the Brewers. His season included a walk-off hit in the ninth inning with the bases loaded in a tie game on July 27th at American Family Field. And afterwards, during media availability, Perkins made a comment that caught people's attention.
Definitely appreciative of the moment and of the success, you know. It's been a long, long road, and I feel like, I don't feel like I'm way behind, but I do feel like, you know, this is the middle of the season for a lot of these guys, and I'm kind of coming in late. So it's just great. Great to come through for the guys, and just appreciating these moments a little bit more.
On the surface, it may have seemed like Perkins was just referring there to the progress that he had to go through to come back from the shin injury, ultimately culminating in that walk-off hit. But behind the scenes, for several months, Perkins and his family had been going through a completely separate issue. His mother, Carissa, had been diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer months before, and her journey fighting the illness tragically ended on July 3rd when she passed away at just 54 years old. About a month and a half after her death, Perkins was placed on the bereavement leave list in August to attend her funeral. And while news of why he was on the list would ultimately spread through social media channels, etc., we hadn't heard much from Perkins himself talking about the experience until the piece was put out by Todd, which in my eyes captures one of the most important elements to being a good sports beat reporter, which is that development of trust among the players you cover every single day. This was talked about by a former sports reporter for the Boston Globe, Brian Moritz, a few years ago in a piece that I was recently reading on this relationship between athletes and reporters. In the piece Brian wrote, he quoted a sports psychologist, Dr. Andrew Wolanin, who wrote that in an ideal world, having the ability to form relationships with athletes is incredibly effective for journalists and for the athletes to trust somebody and know they're going to use what's being said in an appropriate way takes some time to cultivate. Todd's piece is a good example of this in practice, and it also captures the idea I mentioned in our last segment talking about the Adam Prussell story, that sometimes our best attribute we can use as journalists and reporters is to just take a beat and listen, really listen, because I think a lot of people in the public feel sometimes that reporters and the media just are only listening for what they want to hear, grabbing that, and then moving on with their day. So I think Todd's piece is a great example of what kind of a great story can come about if you just take a moment and really listen to what someone is telling you. I did reach out to Todd to try to get a hold of him and have him join me for this week's episode, but obviously, as he is a beat reporter covering a Brewers-Cubs playoff series playing out right now, I completely understand that he just wasn't able to work it out for this week, but I'd love to have Todd on in the future to get his perspective on this article and break it down further, so stay tuned for that interview to come. Oh, and by the way, go Brewers, beat the Cubs. Not to be lost in Brewers baseball and Packers football and, to a lesser extent, Badger football, is Bucks basketball, which starts pretty soon here. And in honesty, the season really began this past week with the return of several Bucks stars to Milwaukee to participate in the annual Media Day. Media Day varies from team to team, but it seems like the Bucks do Media Day arguably better than anyone else in the state in terms of access to stars, getting quotes. You may recall last year a reporter asking then Buck Damian Lillard this question.
Glorilla shot her shot at you a moment ago. You giving that any kind of action? It's 7 p.m. Friday.
I'm weak. That is hilarious.
Well, I'm joined now by WTMJ's Nazir Spencer, who was our reporter for Media Day this year. Now, Nazir, with no Dame in Milwaukee anymore, I assume there were no gorilla questions brought up at Media Day this time around.
No questions like that at all. It was like all good vibes. Unfortunately, Giannis was not able to make it.
Yeah, now that's the interesting nugget in all this. So Giannis is still in his native Greece. He's got COVID and was unable to join the team. So he was at Media Day, albeit virtually. Now, we've got experience with virtual interviews from 5 years ago during the pandemic. That's nothing new. But I got to imagine, as someone who is in the room for all the media events, while it's still fun and exciting, having star numero uno not physically in the building probably changed the vibes a little bit, no?
It was a little awkward because, you know, the ongoing trade rumors that are happening, people are thinking, oh, maybe he's just that upset that he just wants to get out of here. But he was really stuck in Greece with COVID. He plopped onto a Zoom call, which is really cool. So you got to talk to him while he was sitting in his mansion in Greece.
Did you have a chance to ask him anything yourself?
I did. I asked him, you know, I really wanted to know more about his dynamic and how excited he's supposed to be with Miles Turner, the new addition from Indiana. And he answered, you know, lightly. He said that he's very excited that they're going to be one of the best backcourts or frontcourts in the league. And, you know, it's that he's just that excited for him. And Miles Turner, you know, reciprocated the energy when he was in there as well.
Yeah, I've noticed Miles out and about around the town the last few weeks, and he seems to have taken to Milwaukee fine. You always do wonder with acquisitions like that when they're brought from somewhere they were for a while and you bring them into a new place. We saw the entourage that Dame received when he came to Milwaukee a few years ago. Did you get the sense from what you heard from Miles at all that he seems ready and raring to go?
Oh, he was very happy, very adamant about being a part of that team. And he even brought up, you know, you see him at the Green Bay games, he threw a pitch at the Brewers game last week. I mean, he was extremely excited to be a part of the community. And he even said that, you know, he was walking around and people were just embracing him, that he, you know, brought him a new sense of mind that he's with a new team, a new environment, because he's been in the league for 11 years.
So take us into Media Day, specifically what it's like for you as someone who's covering this, because you're far from the only reporter there. Give us a sense of what's the room like, what can, what can't you do?
I mean, there's a bunch of different reporters in there. There's a bunch of business reporters in there, ESPN, you know, Journal Sentinel was there, and, you know, we were there, and, you know, the normal local channels that are also there. But it was also fun. It's so fun because everyone's just sitting there asking questions. It was mainly like four people asking all the questions, but it was still pretty cool to hear everyone and, like, you know, just how they want to know, what they want to know about these new players on the Bucks. So I mean, it was really cool. But what you can and cannot do, I just assume you can't really ask, you know, really wild questions, but maybe you can. No one really did that. No one really tried to this year. But, you know, people are going to ask about Giannis and the trade rumors and stuff like that. But no one really tried to, you know, just poke the bear at all, which is pretty nice. But
I was going to ask if Shams was there, because he's been stirring the pot, a lot of people have said, on these Giannis trade rumors. Doesn't sound like he was there today.
No, he wasn't there today because he's been getting a lot of heat right now because of, you know, Giannis not leaving yet. So people are like, oh, you're such a liar, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, he wasn't there. But he has some sources telling him some of this stuff. But it was just really nice to just talk to all those players, too. You know, Bobby Portis was there. New additions like Cole Anthony and Amir Coffey were there. You know, Bobby really talked about being a leader of the team now because he's one of the three players left from that championship team. And I asked him, you know, talk to me how important it is for you to be a leader of this Bucks team now. So it was pretty nice to hear his response. It was pretty fun.
WTMJ's Nazir Spencer with a recap of Bucks Media Day. Thanks, Nazir.
No problem.
Topic area of interest that we've covered several times on the show with various reporters is environmental reporting. You've heard from Caitlin Luby and Madeline Heim, both who write for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, on various topics, whether it's Lake Michigan or the Mississippi River, over the course of the show's run so far. But there's interesting environmental stories in the news relatively recently here in our area. Now, we happen to have someone right here in-house who was able to cover both of them because it's an area that I personally think she's both passionate about and interested in. She is WTMJ's Jessica Gatzel with me for the first time on Reporter's Notebook. Jessica, welcome in.
Thanks for having me.
So, Jessica, before we get started with some of the stories I just set up for you there, it is tradition on the show for the first timers, as you are today, to kind of give us a little bit of your background. How did you come up in reporting and journalism? Where did you go to school? What did you learn? How did you get where you are today?
Sure. So I've been at WTMJ for a couple of years now. I went to school at UW-Milwaukee, majored in journalism. Mm-hmm. I've also done some freelance writing along the way here.
So that's interesting because I find freelance writing so unique because it's this world of news and reporting or entertainment writing, whatever you do, where you're your own boss. You are advocating for yourself, but still working with various outlets. Like you've written in a past time for Milwaukee Magazine, several articles that I've written. Can you share a little bit about when you're writing a piece, whether it's for us or any of the ones that you've written in the past, sort of what goes on in your head? What's your writing process like?
My process starts with thinking about, is this something I would want to read and learn about on the other side of journalism?
That's a good start.
The consumer, of course. I definitely lean into stories that have an environmental or arts and culture angle, but maybe don't have a lot of representation out there yet in news coverage, and especially stories that are in Milwaukee or Southeast Wisconsin in general. Having that local tie is what I'm really most interested in.
To that end, I remember reading a piece you wrote a few years ago on an apiary, or for those who don't know, beehives, essentially, right here in downtown Milwaukee at the Hilton Hotel. Was it on the roof of the building?
The roof of the parking structure.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, even hidden amongst the concrete jungle of downtown Milwaukee, we have a thriving beekeeping environment at that time. I'm not familiar if it's still there, but I have no reason to believe it
isn't. It is still there.
So now bringing it back full circle on that point, some stories environmentally that were in the news this past week, and I want to start in the world of wind farms. Now, for a little bit of background, here in Southeast Wisconsin, specifically in our northern counties, think Dodge, Sheboygan, Fond du Lac counties, we have tons of these wind farms, these turbines that were built up about 15, 20-ish years ago. In my home, Fond du Lac, just to the south and east, two of the largest wind farms in the state were built when I was in middle school. So I'm very familiar with seeing these pop up, and there was a period where Wisconsin was all in on these giant wind turbine farms for generating a new kind of renewable energy. But we haven't had a new wind farm in the state for a while, until it seems like pretty soon, right?
That's right. Since 2011, to be exact. But now the first one to actually have approval from the Public Service Commission is going to be Badger Hollow Wind Energy Center. And we're looking at southwest Wisconsin in Grant and Iowa counties for this project.
So it's interesting, the geography of that region. If you've never been, it's part of what we call the Driftless area. So I lived in La Crosse for many years, and from that area to the south, it's very rolling hills. There's a lot of river valleys. And so when I think of where these turbines could be placed, it seems like a pretty good fit because there's not a lot of building, there's not a lot of big buildings around that would block the wind turbines from doing what they need to do. A lot of very rural space, right?
Exactly. It's going to spread across agricultural land, and that land will, for the majority, still continue to be in agricultural use. Only about 30 acres will need to get taken out of use, but it's going to be spread across 15,000 acres of land.
Do we know how much energy these turbines will generate? Because I know we're talking in giga and megawatts for a lot of these projects closer to home here.
Yeah, this one is projected at 118 megawatts, so about 30,000 homes annually.
So it's so interesting when we think about things like wind farms and generating that kind of energy, because energy has been in the news a lot locally recently when it comes to AI data centers. And one of the voices that you reported on in your story on this wind farm in southwest Wisconsin is Clean Wisconsin, who in your reporting was thumbs up, we're all in on this. It's so interesting comparing and contrasting data centers and their response to that of there's no transparency and how much water is this going to use versus something like this, which I remember a few back in the boon, a lot of the concern was, oh, there's going to be so much congestion if there's these wind turbines all over the place. But it seems a lot of those concerns have been alleviated.
With this project in particular, especially, instead of having a lot of wind turbines, there's only going to be 19 of these spread across all of those acres. So they're much larger, but that will alleviate that sort of crowding that a lot of people, or that some people might be concerned about.
I can speak to that. So the two farms I mentioned close to where I grew up, that's about 175-ish turbines between the two, so about 88 each one. And one of the things that's always so fascinating to me about wind turbines is at night, when you're driving on the highway, you can't see the turbines doing their thing, but it's like there's blinking red lights, bloop, bloop, all across the night sky. It's also, it's kind of eerie sometimes if you think it looks like a UFO or something like that. But with this project, there's a little bit of a difference there. These red lights that we know are on top of turbines, they won't blink all the time, right?
So this project is considering using a new lighting system that's never before been used in Wisconsin, at least at the utility scale for wind turbines, to alleviate those blinking red lights, which they're, you know, they're required by the FAA, obviously, for safety mm-hmm. with aircraft, but they're, like you said, constantly blinking. So this new technology called Aircraft Detection Lighting System Towers would have sensors that only activate the lights when an aircraft is approaching.
Another environmental story in the news relatively recently, not this past week, but within the last few weeks, was a major revitalization and rework project on in Milwaukee's Bayview neighborhood, the South Shore Beach Project. We've been talking about this, it seems like, for years. The beach has had a laundry list of issues, specifically with E. coli and bacteria, making it one of the lowest rated beaches in that regard across the entire country. So give us some background, other than that, on what led up to what you were covering a few weeks ago.
So this indeed did start at the start of the century here. South Shore Beach was notorious for appearing on those top 10 dirtiest or worst beaches in America. So Milwaukee County Parks and other partners, including the UW-Milwaukee School of Freshwater Science, started the research of, hey, what can we do to improve this beach in the early 2000s? So about 50 or so students start collecting water samples and testing water movement. After about a decade or so of this research, they come to the conclusion that restoring this beach is going to take a lot of work and not have the highest success rate. Why don't we just pick it up and move it somewhere else? And it turned out, after this research, that about 400 feet to the south was a perfectly suitable area for a new swimming beach.
And that it's you summarize it greatly in the headline for your piece on WTMJ.com, the quote right off the top, we can just pick up this beach and move it. And turns out that was the answer, which is fascinating because 400 feet in the grand scheme of things, that's not a very wide distance. But when you're talking about moving a beach any amount of distance, quite literally, that's a heavy lift.
So definitely not the most simple undertaking and actually not a very common thing to do, but it has been done before. And the circumstances were just a lot more viable for a beach in this new location. Now, that doesn't mean that the old one was just neglected. The old South Shore Beach was converted into green space. So where was sand now is grass and also lots of native plants that are going to help with the stormwater runoff and keep the new beach cleaner.
Well, it'll get plenty of eyes for sure. South Shore Beach and South Shore Park, very popular in the warmer months especially. And there's a lot of rolling hills as well. So when you think about collecting stormwater, it would seem that anytime it rains, that's just a perfect natural environment to just roll down right into those river keeping or water keeping spaces, which we do see others throughout the city, not just in Milwaukee, but others as well.
Definitely. And speaking of other things throughout the city, the rehabilitation of South Shore Beach is just one project in quite a large undertaking in the Milwaukee Estuary Area of Concern.
So define that for me, an estuary area of concern. What does that mean?
So this is one of 31 areas across the Great Lakes that have been designated as some of the most environmentally degraded areas in the region. It's an action plan with a goal of rehabilitating these areas in each section, including Milwaukee. So this is one milestone. Another recent one was the Esterbrook Dam that was removed. But that project is still in progress with the fish passage that they're creating for the waterfall there. So that's kind of Milwaukee Parks' next step as part of removing Milwaukee from this list.
And Jessica, before I let you go, on the South Shore project, you know, that area has a lot of walking paths. The Oakleaf Trail moves through that area, very popular for biking and walking around. This project in particular, though, does have, as far as paths go, a notable element.
So another improvement to the new South Shore Beach is having ADA accessible trails and paths both to the sand and going out into the water. These paths are all open now. They were kind of still in progress throughout the summer, and Milwaukee County Parks is just putting those finishing touches on the restoration now, where some of all the paths are open, but some of them are still fenced off to let some new grass and plants grow.
Well, as the weather stays warm into early October, certainly those paths seem like they will at least get a lot of use in their infancy. WTMJ's Jessica Gatzow, great stuff. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.